Jason and John guests appear on the ATC Fitness phone line. ATC Fitness. This is the Jason and John Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Ben Golliver is the national NBA columnist for the Washington Post. He's a host of the Open Floor Pod. He's certainly got a little bit more to talk about now than he did this time a month ago, and he joins us now. Hey, Ben, what's going on, man? Appreciate the time.
Much. We're getting a little momentum, aren't we?
Yes.
Feels like it.
Yes, indeed. When you think about, obviously, there's a lot that goes into this. I mean, the fact that this freaking thing is going to be completed in Disney World is a bit ridiculous, but here we are. The iteration of it, I guess I would ask you, are you in favor of mixing it up? Are you in favor of just keeping it the way it is? Because obviously it sounds like even with the 1-16 tournament, you'd still have 7-game series. Are you a group stage guy? Like, what do you sort of think should be the way forward for the postseason this year?
Look, I think we're all going a little bit crazy during this pandemic. We're staying inside a little bit too long because some of these ideas, guys, that I hear floated out there, they're so complicated. If you need 5 pages to yep. explain your concept and yes. break it down, guess what? If you're trying to attract the casual fan back to your sport, you're playing games in empty gyms with no fans, it's going to be weird on TV, you better keep this thing as simple as possible and make sure people know what's happening. I don't understand why this isn't already a done deal. You look at the NHL, they basically canceled their regular season this week, and they said, here's the format, boom.
Yep.
They didn't have to go through a 3-week process of arguing about every single possible scenario. To me, the answer is easy. Top 16, you know, 8 from the West, 8 from the East. You do the seeds like you normally do it. You know, it's kind of a long, fundamental rule of sports. You don't change the rules halfway through the game, right? You play by the rules, and that's what all those teams came into this season expecting, and that's what they should get. To me, you really want to get this thing in and out, right? You want to land the plane. The most important thing is having your superstars healthy during the NBA Finals. That's what's going to generate the most possible television revenue and viewership numbers. And so from that standpoint, I say don't worry about the play-in stuff. Don't worry about the extra rounds. Don't worry about any of that. Just get it to a simple playoff system. Get the finals going. And then, you know, you can start worrying about next year.
Do you think that because Dame Lillard's come out, right, and you've had some others, but I'm with you. I thought we'd be a little bit further along than we are in terms of a plan. Did it change, or has there never been a concrete? You figure Silver, smart man, was leaning one way or the other. I just wonder if some of this, you know, indecision right now, is how much of it's based on Dame speaking out and saying, look, I want a chance. Did it ever change, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, yeah, I'd say this way. I mean, look, a star of that magnitude speaking that directly and sort of making almost a threat, like, look, if you don't play the way I want to play, I'm going to sit down. That carries a lot of weight. There's no question. But the bottom line is the league, in any league, is bigger than one particular star, right? They have to be. They have to take into account all interests. And so I think Adam Silver has always made it a priority. Every step of his tenure to make sure that he's involving owners, players, agents, even coaches. I mean, he wants to hear from everybody before he makes the decision. So I think this is just a case of, you know, Adam Silver being very thorough. One point I'd like to make, though, I don't want this to drag out too much longer, because I think some of these headlines wind up actually being damaging and distracting to the game. I think it takes away from some of the excitement factor of trying to get the game back on. And if I could tell Adam Silver anything, it would be this. Everybody says you handled the Donald Sterling situation perfectly, right? That's like the highlight of his tenure. And not only did he make the right call, but he made the right call kind of regardless of whose feelings he was going to hurt, you know, with the Sterlings, or whether there was going to be legal repercussions or any of that stuff. He just made the right call because it was the thing to do. He acted forcefully, directly, and he got it done. And I think that we're reaching a similar point right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've even heard it from the union, right? Michelle Roberts has come out and said, hey, Adam, man, it's time, right? We've been waiting. Like, what's the deal here? And I think he needs to look back on that that high point of his tenure and realize he's got a lot of goodwill, you know, built up. People respect him. People trust him. And at some point, he can just make a call. And if people's feelings are hurt, like Damian Lillard, tough. You know, you're an under 500 team that wasn't in the playoff picture. You'll be back next year. Your team's going to be healthier next year, and you'll be in the playoffs next year. Who cares? You know, don't worry about it. It's not the end of the world. And I promise you this, guys who are upset right now, you know, in June, July, and August, as we go forward this summer, they're going to be over it by the time training camp rolls around next year.
And well, to his point, Ben, it's safer
yes.
with just the 16. And shouldn't that be the priority? Like, that's the part about it. I know that, you know, it seems like we're getting to, well, we got to get the TV money, so got to get to 70 games. It seems like safety is sort of not being prioritized like we thought, like we always, you know, knew that it had to be. That's frustrating.
I'm glad you said that, because it's kind of driving me crazy.
Yeah.
When they first came out a month ago, they were saying, oh, health and safety is the top priority, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if that was true, you wouldn't even be allowing families or anybody else into this bubble, right? Mm-hmm. If that was true, the bubble would be strict. It would be super small. And if health and safety was really the top priority, you probably wouldn't even be doing this until we saw more progress in terms of the overall number of people who have this disease. I mean, bottom line, 100,000 people have died from this. It's a crazy milestone. It's not necessarily slowing down as much as we all hope. I think that the scenario they've constructed at Disney World sounds pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it could be better. I mean, it definitely could be a lot worse. But to me, I do think that it's going to be a very delicate balance as they go forward, managing the public relations side, actually convincing people that they're taking every step possible to protect these players. Because if they are chasing some of those local television deals, they're adding in all these play-in tournaments and everything else. That's not chasing safety. That's chasing money.
100%.
Yeah, we are, of course, talking to Ben Golliver, covers the NBA for the Washington Post. I'm just and it's sort of sticking with it, but like if it wasn't, you know, if Zion was in the eighth seed and it wasn't the Memphis, I mean, in the Eastern Conference, for example, right? You look at sort of the lead that the Magic have on the Wizards and everybody else. It's at least 5.5, okay? And they've said, well, we don't have to bring back the East because 5.5 is enough. With the Grizzlies, that lead is still 3.5. I mean, what's the cutoff here for what the NBA believes is a surmountable sort of lead? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the cutoff. I mean, 3.5 is still. It's not like it's, if it's a half game, I might entertain it, but it's 3.5. You had 60 plus games to figure this thing out.
Oh, hey, if I were you guys, I would be in the bunker saying Memphis versus the world right now. I mean, I would really I'd be stoking those arguments because it is pretty funny, right? Everybody wants to play in tournament just with the Western Conference. Like, nobody really wants to see Washington or Charlotte. Everybody, all the momentum is around, oh, let's get Damian Lillard, let's get Zion Williamson in. I mean, look, here's the deal. I think a lot of these play-in tournaments, it goes back to this idea that millions of people were tuning in to watch Zion's every single move, right? I mean, we saw it all season long. The guy is a legitimate television phenomenon. We've seen it all the way back to his high school days. There's very few players who can really move the ratings needle like Zion. It's just a fact. And, LeBron's up there, maybe a couple other guys, but that's just how it works. And the NBA had tough ratings all year. They lost up to $400 million because of the China controversy, right? The projected losses here because of the coronavirus, are going to top $1 billion, if not more. So there is a real, financial motivation here for them to try to, like, come up with something to kind of juice the ratings. I guess my point is this. You could be penny wise and pound foolish, right? You go out there and try to get Zion into one of these play-in brackets, and maybe he only plays 4 or 5 games, and you do pretty well off those games. But if you expand this tournament, and God forbid someone gets sick or an entire team has an outbreak, and that completely compromises the rest of your playoffs because, you're not having the same kind of competition that you were hoping for. Or imagine if a major superstar came down with this thing right before the finals because you had extended this bubble for so long and eventually somebody just got it. Yeah. That could really wind up, backfiring and blowing up in your face. So that's why I say get in and get out, right? Like, we all watch those heist movies, when people are robbing the bank. It's always when they go back for the extra money that the cops show up, right? Like, if they just kept it simple, you're out of there, you're making your clean getaway. And I kind of feel like that should be Adam Silver's mentality.
This feels special to us, Ben. I wonder if it feels the same way from a national perspective. In terms of Ja, it feels like that Memphis, which so long was grit and grind and going against sort of the way the NBA was going, and you'd have to defend your stars and the guys you loved, and Mike Conley that never made an All-Star game. Ja feels different. It feels like there's real superstar potential here. And that the other part, clearly this team's ahead of schedule. They're in the 8th spot in his rookie year, but that it doesn't feel like a fluke. Like, this is something special going forward with Jaren. Brandon Clark was a steal. Does it feel that way to you about this young team, or are you looking at them like, okay, well, Sacramento looked good a couple of years ago. They haven't quite turned the corner. Do you see special when you look at this young Grizzlies team?
Yeah, I don't know how you can't see special when you're looking at Ja Morant. I mean, the other thing I love about him is just the mentality, the leadership stuff. Like, when he comes out and says, hey, I want to play kind of no matter what, he makes it real clear, real plain. During this pandemic, it's like, of course he does, man. Put him anywhere, that guy's going to want a ball. It's his whole life, and I love young players like that. When it's clear that Basketball is their driving passion and focus. Look, you know, a player like him is going to make hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of his career if he keeps playing like this. You know, there's no question. I mean, he's in the Rookie of the Year conversation, could be an All-Star next year. He's going to wind up being one of those max-level players if he keeps progressing, right? There's a lot that goes with that. You know, the most important thing to make sure you stay on track and kind of reach your total potential is love for the game. You know, that's just the bottom line, number one characteristic I look for when I'm assessing young players. Is this guy's entire life structured around basketball, or is he just having fun as an NBA player? And to me, I could look at both Ja and Jaren, and Jaren's obviously raised in, you know, both sides of his, you know, his parents are deeply invested in the game. And that just tells you, you got the right kind of core there. So I love watching those guys play. You know, selfishly, I live in LA. So that first round series, had it played out, probably would have been Lakers versus Grizzlies, right? Not complaining about that one. You know, if Zion catches them, great. Then we're talking about this great, you know, television's rating bonanza. But if he doesn't, you know, Ja versus LeBron sounds pretty good to me. So, you know, I think that this is going to be a very weird launch point or entry point just for these guys' career. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine being a rookie coming in and having your season blown up. It's sort of like the high school kids who, you know, don't get to graduate because, you know, because of this coronavirus. But ultimately, this is going to be a 10, 15-year plan for a guy like him. And he fell in your lap, man. I know you guys don't take him for granted, but he fell in your lap big time.
Yeah, we're happy it happened. We're, of course, talking to Ben Golliver. He covers the NBA for the Washington Post. We're all thinking about sort of life after, you know, the pandemic, or at least as it subsides. I think one effect of that is the NBA's start to next season is going to probably be around Christmas. Do you expect that will be here to stay? Do you expect that will be a permanent alteration to the start of the NBA schedule, a Christmas start?
It's a fascinating question. My biggest problem with doing that is if you do that, you wind up having your finals are probably in like August, right? Mm-hmm. That means your free agency period winds up being in September. Your drafted free agency period winds up being in kind of that September range.
Yeah.
And look, the NBA, for all the fun they have, you know, at the finals and kind of the global basketball showcase that is, I mean, I know you guys probably see your most phone calls during free agency, right? Your most attention, most tweets and all that kind of stuff during free agency. Mm-hmm. Do you really want to dump your free agency period, this time where everybody's excited about your league, the hot stove stuff, right in the middle of college football, NFL, and the baseball, you know, run to the playoffs? I mean, that does not seem very smart to me at all. Like, I think the real argument everybody wants to push the schedule back is so you don't have to have your games compete against football in the fall, right? But to me, like, are those early season games more important than free agency? It kind of seems like free agency is the tail wagging the dog these days. So
yeah,
that would be my biggest hesitation. I just wouldn't want, I mean, because think about it. We're sitting around waiting on Kevin Durant on 4th of July for like a week, right? Waiting for his decision. I mean, that's a real genuine interest and attention in the sport. And if you're putting that up against, Bama versus Mississippi, right? Forget about it, man. You're not winning that battle. What are you thinking? That doesn't seem like the best idea to me.
Ben, man, we appreciate the time. As always,
you,
great
man.
Work. We look forward to reading some game stuff here soon. Thank you, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yep. It is Ben Golliver. Covers NBA for the Watch.
The Gary Parrish Show.
Moussa Cisse, the 5-star center at Lausanne Collegiate School, is reclassifying, going to play college basketball next season. His name, of course, is Jonathan Givony. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
So people have been talking about Moussa Cisse reclassifying for a while. It becomes official today. Do you have a sense, Jonathan, for how long this had been in the works?
I think it's been something that he's been considering since last summer, you know, having such a great showing on the Nike EYBL circuit and leading the EYBL in blocks and finishing second in rebounding. I do think that there were some academic question marks that he had to answer. He was able to get through those. He took some online classes that kind of sped up his progress academically. And then what he really told me was the big factor was playing in those open gyms in Memphis all year long, going up against college guys, going up against James Wiseman and against Precious Achiuwa, his good friend, and seeing that he can hold his own at that level was really a big factor for him in making this decision to skip his final year of high school basketball.
I think everybody here is familiar with him, have seen highlights. You've seen him more than most. What kind of prospect is he?
Well, he's a freakish athlete. He's almost 7 feet tall. He has a 7'4 wingspan. He has a 9'4 standing reach. I mean, those are unbelievable measurements. I mean, that's what, you know, you look at a guy, you know, like a Dwight Howard, for example. Those are the kind of physical tools that he has. He doesn't have that type of body yet, but I do think he'll get there in time. He's made major strides physically. Right now, his game is primarily centered around his athleticism, his defensive, his rebounding. He has made some progress offensively. His hands look a lot better. When I saw him in February, he was starting to step outside and shoot a little bit. It's not going to be a major part of his game in the next couple of years, but he is not, you know, he's going to be able to contribute a little bit on the offensive end, but I think he's going to, you know, put a lid on the rim, and it's going to be very hard to score against him, and that's the biggest thing that he offers from an NBA perspective.
And at the collegiate level, like, is it a stretch to suggest that he could next season, and again, the skill set's got a ways to go, as you point out in the story. He hasn't been playing basketball his entire life, but on the defensive end of the court, is it reasonable to suggest he could be one of, if not the best, rim protectors in college basketball next season?
Oh, there's no question. Just the way that he moves and that length and the timing that he has, and he's really never been coached. Now, I asked him about, you know, have you studied a lot of film? Is the shot blocking something that you've worked on? You know, and he said, no. He said, this comes completely natural to me. You know, and it's just me going out there and using my instincts and using my athleticism and my competitiveness. That's what really has brought me to where I am. And so it's only a matter of, you know, time really until he actually gets into a weight room and starts to put some more bulk onto his frame and getting into film sessions and practice, you know, competing against other Division I players on a nightly basis. I think that's going to really expedite his development. And those are some of the factors that he talked about. You know, I spoke with him for about an hour the other day in getting this article prepared.
I'm talking to Jonathan Givony from ESPN, NBA draft analyst, on Twitter at Draft Express. He broke the news this morning, Moussa Cisse, the five-star center at Lausanne Collegiate School, reclassifying to 2020, planning to play college basketball next season. Reportedly, the G League program that Jalen Green is a part of had been in conversations with him and his people as well. Are we certain that that's no longer a option for him?
Yeah, I asked him that question point blank, and also about the extent of the conversations that he had. He said they had been in contact, an offer was put on the table, but it never really appealed to him. It never got too far because it's been his dream to play college basketball since he arrived here in the United States almost 5 years ago. That's been what this is building towards. And so the G League isn't in the picture, and neither are any other professional options. He's going to play college basketball next season. That's 100% from what he told me.
So he's down to six schools, and most people seem to think LSU is the favorite. Do you have a sense for where you think he might commit when he commits?
I didn't press him too hard on this because it's really not, you know, my line of work, figuring out where a kid's going to go to school. But, I mean, I would think that Memphis is going to have a really good chance just because they're the local school. I mean, that's where he went to high school this year. He was in, I mean, that's a huge advantage to have him on campus as many times as they did coming in to open gym. He talked to me at length about Precious Achiuwa. I mean, how that was the guy that took him under his wing when he arrived in the United States. They were both at St. Benedict's High School. And, you know, he has to look at the year that Precious had. I think Precious made tremendous strides over the course of the year, and he really improved, and he's a much more ready player in from the NBA standpoint, playing from day one, than he was a year ago. I remember being at the pro day, I think it was in October. He was a total mess, honestly. So they really, really helped him, and I don't think that's lost on him. So, I mean, I'm not in the prediction business, but I mean, it felt to me like Memphis is the school to beat, even though there's a pre-existing relationship there with LSU. Basically, you know, the person he calls his brother, Zai Jean-Baptiste Ba, who lives in Switzerland right now and is very involved in the day-to-day. He has a pre-existing relationship with one of the assistants on LSU staff, Zai played at Birmingham Southern, and that's where LSU is coming from. But I do think that Memphis has made up a huge amount of ground. And, you know, if I were a betting man, I'd be betting on the Memphis Tigers. But we'll see how things go.
Well, that's really interesting because I think most Memphis fans are a little less than optimistic on this, simply because most of the recruiting analysts seem to think that LSU is the leader and the favorite and going to get this done. But you're the one media person on the planet who spent an hour on the phone with Moussa Cisse earlier this week. So it's interesting to hear you think Memphis has got a really good shot. I'm talking to Jonathan Gavone from ESPN on Twitter at Draft Express. You mentioned Precious Achiuwa. You know, he is somebody who I was at part of the pro day, not the entire thing, but I heard the same thing you heard coming out of that he really liked to shoot it, didn't make it a lot, didn't look great. What exactly helped elevate him in the season? The one thing that stood out to me was he showed an ability, I think specifically at the end of the Houston game, you know, how he could switch, he could guard smaller players, stay in front of them. Obviously, that's a very important skill at the NBA level now. What did you see throughout the season from him?
I think Precious Achiuwa's expectations of the type of season he was going to have and the player that he was coming into Memphis was not completely realistic. I think he had watched a lot of film of guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo, of Kevin Durant, and he said, this is going to be the type of player I'm going to be. I'm going to showcase my skill set on the perimeter, all that. And we know that that's not exactly his strength at this point. And so I think that the biggest switch came on the mental side, where he just bought into the fact that he needs to be able to guard 1 through 5, to bring energy on every possession and to use those incredible physical tools that he has inside the paint on both ends of the floor every minute that he's on the floor. And once he really bought into that, I think it happened, you know, midway through the season, his game went to another level, and, you know, NBA scouts really fell back in love with him. There was some talk, you know, early on, November, December, that maybe he's not even going to be a top 20 draft pick, but he squashed all of that with the way that he played over the last 2 months of the season in particular. And I think I think he really put together a blueprint for what his role is going to be in the NBA. And if he is going to develop into this great shooter and great ball handler, and I mean, they'll take that, you know, they'll love that, but it's got to start for him on the defensive end. And that's where I think those conversations with Moussa Cisse could come in really handy for Memphis.
I think during the season at times Precious thought that maybe having to play the five after Wiseman left the program was going to hurt him with NBA people. But from your perspective, it just didn't really matter.
It doesn't matter because it's a positionless game now, and everybody is looking to play as small as possible. The fact that he has that type of body length and standing reach and athleticism allows him to play any position on the floor, allows him to guard any position on the floor. And so the fact that he can switch onto a point guard, that just makes him all the more attractive. And Memphis, to their credit, did a great job of giving him some freedom offensively too. If he went and got a rebound, he was allowed to bring the ball up and initiate the offense himself, and that's really appealing to a guy like Precious Achiuwa. And so I think there was a little give and take there between him and the coaching staff, where he said, you give us this on the defensive end and as a rebounder, and we'll let you do this offensively. And I think it really worked. It's unfortunate that we didn't get to see how it would have looked in the conference tournament, because it felt like he was playing his best basketball towards the end of the season.
Wrapping up here with Jonathan Gavone from ESPN. He's on Twitter at Draft Express. Last thing before I let you go, obviously, or at least it seems obvious, I don't guess it's official yet, the NBA draft is not going to happen in the month of June. When do you think Adam Silver will be announcing players have been selected by NBA franchises again?
I'm guessing late September, and the way things are looking, September 25th is a date that I've heard being thrown around. Nothing's official, obviously. We have to wait and see what happens with the season. But they're really not in a rush to you know, the NBA draft is really the last thing on their mind right now. It's not a money earner for them. And so, you know, the season and in the playoffs, that's the priority.
That's Jonathan Gavone from ESPN, NBA draft analyst. Make sure you're reading him at ESPN.com. You follow him on Twitter at Draft Express. You're the best, buddy. I appreciate you being here, and stay safe up there in New York.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for being here. That's Jonathan Gavone.
The Giannotto and Jeffrey Show.
Tim Bond Temps covers the NBA for ESPN.
I personally am very excited, and I was very excited to see this Memphis team in the playoffs against the Lakers or against anybody. And I am happy that regardless of what this thing is going to look like, we're going to get to see John Morant playing games. Again, assuming everything plays out the way it's supposed to.
The home of the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show, weekdays 2 p.m. till 4 p.m., 92.9 FM ESPN.